Well, welcome everybody, and it's a delight to be here. We say that who we're inviting to these webinars are social pioneers, and certainly Lisa Hatton is a great example. I would say she's also an educational inventor who's found an incredible way to introduce people who are from the world of profession into the world of neighborhood. So, Lisa, you're talking to us today. Where are you located now?
Yes, I'm located in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, which is the middle of the mitten, at Central Michigan University, the College of Medicine.
And if I understand it, we're going to be talking today mainly about the activities that you engaged in for about 15 years, a little earlier in your life than the work you're doing right now. But at any rate, you were in Saginaw, and can you tell us how you began being interested in health and neighborhoods and professionals? But how did this all get started?
Well, for many years, I was a practice manager of federally qualified health center. And so I was really learning about population health and access to health and health equity. And I took a position in Saginaw with Healthy Community Partners, which is a nonprofit, and tried to figure out a way to bring health education to professionals, but that could also help them understand the dynamics of our neighborhoods. Saginaw has 5 or 6 major neighborhoods. And how could we help our health professionals, medical students from Michigan State University and nursing students from Saginaw Valley State University come together to understand how a neighborhood defines its health in its own terms and its own words and language?
What didn't they understand?
What didn't they understand?
Yes.
Well, our job was to develop a, quote, curriculum, if you will, and bring these students into the neighborhood so they could see that neighborhoods have a different way of interpreting their health. And using the ABCD process, we were able to broaden neighbors' thinking about what health could be or understanding health in their own terms. So we brought the students into the neighborhoods, and we connected them with families to primarily have a conversation, not to come in as a health professional, make sure they were not wearing their white coats or their stethoscopes, and to have a conversation with families in the neighborhood.
Did you prepare them to do that?
Yes, we did. Before they ever entered the neighborhood, we had been working in the Cathedral District for several years and had gotten to know many families. And we knew that we just couldn't have students all of a sudden showing up at someone's house. So we met with the students several times, and we introduced them to appreciative inquiry techniques and talked with them and practiced and role modeled about how to have egalitarian dialogue based on the work of Paulo Freire. So they would understand that when they went into the neighborhood, it was an open-ended conversation. Everyone could have freedom of expression. It was a positive interaction, and the goal was really to co-create new knowledge in a safe space of what defines health. How do the neighbors define their own health in their own terms?
And you had the fact that you could connect them to families was sort of unusual. How did you relate to the neighborhood before these students that you introduced came along?
Well, I was working with St. Mary's of Michigan Hospital, and our goal was to work in the neighborhood and really create a strong partnership between the hospital and health resources and to help the neighborhood any way we can. So I'd been working in the neighborhood for a couple of years, and I recall the president and CEO of the hospital said, "Can you give a report to our board of directors? They'd like to know, how the work is going in the neighborhood." And so I gave a report, but the thing I stressed the most was my outcome, my major outcome of my work in 2 years is that the neighbors now trust me, so now we can have a conversation. I think they were a little taken aback by that. But it was relationship building. As you know, it's all relationship building.
And it's not short term.
No. No. And we also, anybody that wants to work in the neighborhood, our advice has always been, do not go in with an agenda or a research project or a program you want to try. Our advice has always been, go to be a neighbor. You know, be a neighbor first. And go to the neighborhood association meetings and sit and listen and see what their concerns are and what their assets are. And if you're able to help them in some way, that's great. Or if you can give them a recommendation or be a reference or a resource for them so that they understand that you're not there to get something out of the neighborhood from them. You're there first and foremost to just be a neighbor. And I think our students really began to see that as they developed relationships with our neighbors. So that would be my advice.
Tell me if I were a intern, you would introduce me to a family. What would you tell the family, and what would you have me prepared to do in the interaction?
Well, we would go to the neighborhood associations, the Cathedral District, and we'd ask the neighbors, would anybody like to have a conversation with our medical and nursing students? Would you like them to come to your home? If you want, you can meet in our offices or we'll find a place in the hospital. But invariably, the families wanted to meet in their home. And we said it would take approximately 2 hours and that there would just be an exchange asking them questions like, what creates and sustains health in this neighborhood? You know, what are the health assets that you think defined by you and your family in your in the residents in the neighborhood? And how do you think residents perceive health? It was very open-ended types of questions. And we always had neighbors that volunteered to say, oh, I'd love to talk to students. I'd love to talk to students. So over the course of about 8 or 9 years, we had about 375 families volunteer.
Wow. And this, when the students would get there, you would introduce them to the families, and then how did that work?
We would have the families and the students call each other and connect after families had agreed to talk to some students, and work out a time that worked for the students and the families based on working hours or whatever was convenient. Frequently it was on the weekend, like a Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon. And they would make a time and then they would meet. And then the students afterward would leave and compile their notes. And then after all the students and the families would have approximately 4 or 5 weeks to meet and just talk, we'd reconvene the students into what we called a reflection session, and we would have them report out. We would actually wallboard the assets of the community that they heard from the family members of what creates and sustains health, and we would wallboard this information and then organize it. And when we were done, we could really see, a picture would emerge of all the assets on the wall that have been organized and compiled, of how our neighborhood really described itself in their terms. And it was always really interesting to see that, because it changed from year to year. And we also cautioned our students that when they would report out, be sure you use the terms that the family members use, the language that the family members use. Do not report out in your interpretation, or, you know, do not clinicalize what they're saying. We want to know how they say it and what they're thinking. And so we made them very, very aware of the language and the communication styles of the residents of the neighborhood. So everything that we reported back to the neighborhood association was in their terms, their language.
What would you go ahead, Peter?
I just want to stay with this, the language distinction that you're making between family language. Could you give me some examples or could I interview you and ask you what creates and sustains health in your neighborhood? So I just like to get a real specific feel for what the language of the
When we would ask them this question, they would say that we have parks where we can go for walks. And while that might seem like a no-brainer, you know, in a deep urban core neighborhood, that's a huge asset to be able to get out and walk. And that's how they saw it. Or they saw an asset is that there was maybe a little pocket park that could possibly be used for a community garden. Or the fact they saw it as an asset that, you know, the hospital was there, St. Mary's, because there were always people coming and going out of the building, and that made them feel secure. And just things that we would take for granted, they would talk about. And when you start compiling hundreds of those, it really does paint a different picture. And our students who were, these are baccalaureate and master's level nurse practitioners who have been very steeped in population health and, you know, cerebrovascular disease and cardiovascular disease, to hear someone talk about, you know, being able to take a walk really changed their ideas of what is healthy to people? What is meaningful health to somebody that lives in this neighborhood? Does that help, Peter?
It does, yeah. Very, very, because I wouldn't have thought of those things.
Right, right.
You know, you're saying the determinants of health take us in places we wouldn't have expected.
Yes, and we were very aware of the determinants of health as well.
Right.
Yes.
Another aspect of the health question has to do with the relationships that people have locally.
Yeah.
Did you find or do you think that having groups, associations, networks, relationships had something to do with health? Do people see that? Do you see that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think now there's a lot of research out there that really bears that out. But when people, we'd ask them, you know, what keeps them healthy, they started talking about things like the neighborhood association, that it was growing and people were interested in making changes in the neighborhood. Just that in and of itself was a huge asset to our families. And other assets, you know, being in a faith community or some kind of associational life, whether it was a block club or a music group. Or we had, in our neighborhood, we had a lot of retired cooks, and we connected them all and introduced them to each other, and they did not know they lived within blocks of each other. So, of course, a lot of cooking was going on in the neighborhood. And so, and then when you're cooking, of course, that's an opportunity to talk about healthy choices. And so all of these social gatherings became places where our families could also talk about their health or things that they felt kept them healthy, and they would exchange those ideas with other neighbors.
On the other side of these relationships is isolation. And I'm wondering, at the neighborhood level, there are people who are isolated. Did you learn something from them, or did the students have an opportunity to see the lives of people who are not connected?
Yes, I believe so, because one of the questions they asked families was, you know, again, tell us about your relationships in the neighborhood and the community, and tell us, you know, in your own words, what do you think brings you stress and what gives you joy? You know, what makes you or keeps you strong? What keeps you healthy? And just left them these open-ended questions, and neighbors could say whatever they wanted. And, you know, some of our neighbors would say, my neighbor makes me stressed out sometimes, or I don't feel I know people. Or they would say, I have a stressful relationship with my job right now. Or they might say, I have a strong relationship with my friends. I have a group of friends, and that's what really keeps me going when I'm down or feeling blue. So we got the whole gamut, the whole spectrum of what people thought was stressful or what they thought kept them healthy. And then, of course, the ones that felt isolated, we would have neighbors invite them to the neighborhood association or to some of the other activities that were going on, like the summer picnic and the cooking classes, or you know, whatever seemed to pique their interest. We during this time of this work, we also had parallel work doing capacity inventories in the neighborhood. So we were always learning what people could do, and always trying to connect people by similar gifts, talents, and skills, so they could do it with other people in the neighborhood. So it all really melded into this health program.
This is really
go ahead.
Fascinating. So one of the questions I heard the other day in my own work in these neighborhoods is a woman stood up who works for Children's Hospital. She says, we have all these services, you know, all the things we do that people don't take advantage of. Why don't they take advantage of our, you know, diagnostic, all this stuff? How would you, in your context, Lisa, how would you answer a question like that when here's a health professional very frustrated that people aren't coming to their clinics and all the things they can do?
It is frustrating because there are a lot of resources and assets out there for people. And our hospital asked the same thing. They would hold a health fair and nobody would come. And, you know, I'm like,
I know.
You know, it's like, okay. And I say, well, they don't know you. You know, do you have a relationship with them? So we've tried to look at how can we build relationships between the neighborhood and the hospital. And through our capacity building work, as I said, we found a lot of people who like to cook. And some of our neighbors were such good cooks, and were such and did catering that they created a business, and it was called Stacy's Tasties. Do you love that?
I do.
And,
makes me hungry.
Yes, and they cooked fantastic food, and so we got the hospital to purchase services from this outside catering business for some of its business meetings, or if they were holding something in the neighborhood, they would say, Stacy's Tasties is catering this, your neighborhood caterer, and then people would show up for the food. So it was reaching out in different ways, finding out what the strengths and resources were in the neighborhood, and either purchasing them or connecting through that, and then that brought in people. And so I think that was one of the things that really helped. And then eventually we asked, instead of the hospital putting on the health fair, we asked the neighborhood association, would you like to have some kind of health event? And they said yes. And so in a church one Saturday, we had the neighborhood association put on the health fair. And, you know, some of the folks from the hospital said, well, they're not nurses or doctors. And we said, they don't have to be nurses and doctors. And so neighbors came, and what they got were recipes, grandma's recipes, or they got brochures of all the latest walking club routes that had been developed by the neighbors, places to go if you wanted to gather and have a cup of coffee. And a lot of it was social capacity building types of things. And they found that to be much more helpful than having their blood pressure taken. And so then over time, you know, we introduced things like blood pressure being taken and cholesterol screening and your more traditional type of health care activity.
Did you see any, did you ever measure either the mindset of the health professionals or the health itself of the neighborhood?
Well, we couldn't do that in a traditional way, but we did know that our health professions students really did change their thinking. And what I think what really shifted their thinking is that they had been so steeped in traditional clinical education and seeing people solely as patients and dependent, they began to see, after going out into the neighborhood and talking with neighbors and then coming back and reporting out and having a discussion, that this information would go back to the neighborhood association. And we would invite the students that participated in this exercise to come and attend the neighborhood association, and they would listen to the information being reported back to the neighbors and then listen to the following discussion from the neighborhood association members, and they were just blown away by how these folks decided to use the information that they had helped gather and put together on behalf of the neighborhood. And they would see that we had all kinds of ideas on how to use this. And they realized over time, I think, and we heard this in a lot of the evaluations, that later on when they get out and practice and when they graduate, they want to be very mindful of the resources and assets in the community where they're serving as a practitioner, because they can refer a lot of their patients through a formal chart or care plan. Did you know that there's a walking club here? And, you know, I'd like you to walk 3 miles a week or whatever. You know, here's something for you to use. And so I think they really saw the value in connecting to the neighborhood wisdom on health and using that into their care planning for their patients.
That is really a fantastic educational experience then, because what you're saying is that they're in a place that was focused on treatment and looked at health as a result of treatment, and this experience in the neighborhood led them to see that health was produced not just in a hospital or in a clinic, but was produced in neighborhoods as well. So they had the knowledge of all of the resources that lead to health rather than the narrow resources that medicine has.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. And I, like I said, it really changed our students' thinking. And even to this day, 20 years later, there are still students that go back and see their families in the Cathedral District. It had such an impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard from students that have now been, you know, long practitioners for 10 years or so to say that was one of the defining moments of my professional education, is when I found out there's another whole world of vast and untapped resources and assets that keep people healthy that I never learned in my clinical rotations or saw in a textbook. And I think with our nursing students, too, it was a very valued experience for them. And to this day, we still hear about that.
You think what you've done, you've written it, enough papers about it. Do you think it's spread very much?
Well, yes and no. I would say a lot of formal research since I was in Saginaw 20 years ago working and doing this, a lot of very formal academic and scholarly research has been done. And there's some authors. I want to mention just two authors for listeners if they'd like to follow. One is Professor Kawachi, that's Kawachi. He's with the Harvard Public School of Health. He's done tremendous studies on how capacity building and social interactions really affect health and longevity and morbidity and mortality. And then the other author is Robert Evans, Professor Robert Evans. He's a Canadian epidemiologist, I believe, population health specialist, and he's with the population health program of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research. And he wrote a really interesting book that also shifted my thinking in terms of being a health professional called Why Some People Are Healthy and Why Some Are Not. So I think the academic world is starting to put out a lot of papers and do a lot of scholarly research, but I haven't seen institutions or the healthcare system per se use a lot of these types of techniques that we developed.
But would that be in part that they don't have people associated with them like you? I mean, after all, they're not neighborhood organizers.
Right, with a background in practice management.
Well, exactly. You're bilingual. You live in both. You're a bridge person.
I really am. And thank you for saying that, because I'm, even in my current work now with the College of Medicine, one of my primary roles is community development in our communities. You know, always trying to show people that we have to bridge that this kind of knowledge with our community knowledge so we can co-create a whole new level of knowledge. And it's always been a challenge, but I'm still doing it, so I must enjoy it.
it's a very subtle shift, because most hospitals want to do something but they do it for the sake of the community. They do it as good citizens. And so they sponsor, you know, neighborhood councils and things like that. I don't think, but for them to do it for the sake of producing better health, that's a huge shift.
Yes, I would agree.
That's what you represent. That's the real power of
yes.
the stories you tell, is if you care about health. Now, some hospitals care about disease, not about health. You know, I asked the president of one of the hospitals here, I was doing some work with him, you know, what do you do to promote health in the neighborhood? He says, well, that's not my business. We are experts on disease. I was almost embarrassed. You know, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to give a little speech, finish my lunch. But I thought, here's a guy who's running a $1.9 billion business, which is a large university system. And he's worked it through in his own mind that they only do disease, they don't produce health. And I thought, wow.
Well, and I think our
that's why you always have a job, Lisa.
Yeah, I know. I think our hospital learned what the neighborhood really wanted was for them to be a good neighbor. You know.
Yes.
And they did become a good neighbor, and it's been going well ever since, I guess. So, but I mean, that's not in the mission statement necessarily. You know,
right.
at all, to be a good neighbor to our surrounding neighborhood.
But if they want to produce health, they would listen to you. Also, in the training of health administrators, that's a profession, right? Hospital administration.
Oh yes, oh yes.
That's a group that also I would think
yes.
would well come
yes.
into the community as students and listen to.
Yes.
You know.
And I have to say, in all fairness, I spent a day with the American Academy of Pediatrics doing a workshop for their physicians, and these are physicians that deal primarily in children's issues. And I did an asset-based community development training, and then I shifted it to, let's talk about your patient population. You know, what are the assets of your neighborhoods or communities you serve? And I had them do some work with that, and then we shifted even more. Tell me how your patients would define their health. And then they started to see the difference between the two. And it was really, I think, astounding to them. They really enjoyed it, and they were a great audience and a great group to work with because they really got it. And they realized they needed to start looking at their practices to reflect not only what they could provide in pediatric services to children in the surrounding areas, but also what do the families have to offer to create health, or what do the neighborhoods
yeah.
have to offer, and get that information that they could also pass out to family members dealing with childhood issues.
I think pediatricians in general are probably a little more open. I mean, I don't know if it's true, partly because it's hard to blame the child, you know, where with adults all the way from adulthood to death, it's always the patient's fault. And so that's interesting that you work with pediatricians,
yeah.
And they're open to that conversation.
Yeah, they were. They were a very good group to work with. I really enjoyed them.
One of the other things that is interesting is that a lot of public health people have programs and program goals, and they try to introduce them in local communities. So they come with their agenda, and very often people don't come to the meetings. You hear that over and over again. How do we get these people involved in our program?
Well,
it seems to me that's really fascinating that what you did by these reports back to the Neighborhood Association, you gave them information about what the people in the neighborhood thought about health and made them healthy. And that stimulated them then to take possession and action on the health issue. So you were building it from the bottom up rather than the top down.
That is absolutely correct. All of the information that we compiled two or three times a year, we would go out with our students based on their curriculum and semester dates, et cetera, and we would compile this information and it would go back to the Neighborhood Association. And then they would do with it what they felt they needed to do with it. And, you know, one of the cooler projects that came out of that, and then I'll get back to your question, John, was they had, you know, there were some informal walking groups, but they wanted to really sort of ramp that up and really make it formal so anybody in the neighborhood could walk it. And they had times, they had senior citizen routes and times and after school times and, you know, noon times. And so they put all of this together, the neighbors did, and they created brochures, and they put those brochures in doctors' offices. So that way, so that way, if a physician wanted to refer a patient to get some exercise, they could say, well, I see you live in this neighborhood. Here are the walking times of the walking club there, and here's how you get a hold of them, and you can get a good 3 miles in. So I think that's an example of them taking action and showing that they can also produce health. But I think, again, in terms of public health departments, you know, having an event, I would say my experience, and I work now primarily in rural areas, is to partner with another event. And so it's just not the public health department coming out and hosting this event. Find out what the major events are in that community that people go to, and then contact one of them and say, would you like another partner in this event? You know, can we come out and help you in this event? Do you, you know, possibly can we support or fund a little something with this event? And then if they say yes, then go, you know, create that relationship first. And then the next time say, you know, could we bring a nurse out to do some blood pressure checks or whatever, you know, that community might need or want? Or better, ask them, what if we brought health professionals out, what do you think needs to be checked? They might say, well, you know, maybe do some cholesterol screenings, or maybe tell us how we can develop a, you know, walking club or a cooking class. We want, you know, work with the extension agency in the county, maybe host some healthy cooking classes, you know, ask them what they want. And I think that's a way for an organization to approach becoming immersed in the culture of the community or the neighborhood.
That's great. I think, Maggie, we might invite questions or comments, and then I want to, well, after Maggie speaks, I have another question for you, Lisa.
Okay.
Absolutely. If we would love to have you participate, and we, if you called in using your telephone, you can press *8, and I will see that you have done that, and I can unmute you. Or if you've logged on to the chat, feel free to type into the chat window, and we'll take your comments and questions there.
Thank you. Two things that occur to me. One is a statement that, you know, and people who care about poverty and care about the economics of these neighborhoods, it's almost the identical conversation as to how, what to do for the economic well-being of citizens. Rather than more training and more jobs and this and that, everything you're describing is also true for the economic well-being of a neighborhood, which means that the health and the local economy and people's safety and care are all really so bound together. It's really striking to me. So that's one thought. And then the other is just, I'd be interested in what's unique about working in rural communities along these lines.
Well, I would totally agree with your first statement. It is all interrelated and all interactive, the economy, the health, you know, people's well-being. It's all connected. And as you know, this work sometimes is very siloed, and it's hard to get people to understand that what you're doing has an impact on this going on over here.
Yeah, and it's really the neighborhood event, associational life, and social capital that's where it all gets integrated, or it could be integrated if we just decided that was decisive, like you've done. You've given your life to this.
Yes, and yes, it's a very intentional thing that the social capital piece is really what ties this all together.
Yeah.
You know, so when I tell, like, the health department, you know, everybody's going to this little town because there's a big RV show or camping or you know, right. Bow hunting event. You guys need to go to it. They're like, huh? What? I said,
That's the day. That's modern political activism. You know, that's
don't
great.
That is.
Yeah.
So it's just,
great.
Yeah. And as far as the social capital goes, you know, I just find it interesting because I have to really walk in so many different worlds, and you know, I spend some of my time in the very academic, scholarly world, and then I'm also very grassroots out in rural communities. But what I've noticed in the research is they can hardly agree on a definition of social capital, and that's why they say more research isn't done on its impact on health, because they can't agree on a definition. So.
I know. A group I know, Mars Candy Company, actually has developed a very precise instrument to measure social capital.
Oh.
And it has to do with trust. And they've got like four questions, you know, how trusting are the people around you? How active? What do you do things together? And they have amazing correlation between social capital and the success of the local economy.
Yes.
So there are little pockets of research, but you're right. There's too many professionals involved in the conversation about social capital to agree on much.
And out of the research, what's also really interesting is they're finding that when incomes go up, that's not necessarily an indicator of improved health. It's health equality, or I'm sorry, income equality. And this is what's so, I think, paramount to what you said, Peter, about economic well-being, that when the more that there's income equality in a community or city or town, the healthier people are. That's absolutely been researched.
Really? Is that in these two authors that you talked about?
Yes, both of them talk about it quite a bit, yes.
That's amazing. That's
it is
powerful.
Amazing. Because
powerful.
Yes, because communities where there's less inequity and there's more equity tend to have more resilience and buffer more against disease.
That's amazing.
I know. It is amazing to me.
It is amazing.
Excuse me.
Maggie, anybody calling in?
Yeah, we do have a caller from Ohio that I'm going to invite in. Hi, this is Maggie. Are you on the line?
I am. If it's me you're talking to.
Yes, it is.
Hi, Maggie. Steve Sunderland.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Peter. Hi. Hi, John. And hello, friend.
Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Yes.
Hi,
wonderful
Steve.
Conversation. And directly relevant to what I'm trying to do with cancer. We are in Cincinnati, the cancer capital of Ohio for minorities. And I'm trying to organize local agencies in the communities where their people are the poorest to get involved in cancer education and then screening and then, if needed, treatment. And we partner, just as you suggested, with many events that are happening in the community to get people moving in terms of trusting us and then building a relationship with screening agencies and then with treatment. We haven't been able to get to hospitals, though. They're in every area of our city where there's the poorest people, there's a hospital. And getting the hospitals to reach out to the community and say, when I ask them, what are you doing about cancer in this neighborhood? Their answer is nothing. It's not our job, which is kind of what Peter was saying earlier about his conversation with some unnamed person. So we face this not only silos, but a resistance to looking at the neighborhoods as sources of health or involvement or even interest. I think there's almost a genocidal approach to poor people's health, and so I'm where there's almost an intention to say, well, it's really not our job, and we can accept high levels of mortality as long as it's minorities and poor people, and the city doesn't have to do anything about it, or the community doesn't, or the health department doesn't, or the hospital doesn't. So we all kind of shut our eyes and look the other way, and it's one of the major barriers to really moving forward with a social-based model that really tries to change mortality statistics. I've only seen one area where it's really worked, and that's in New York City with Harold Freeman and his using community organizers to bring people to early screening and early treatment, and we're trying to follow that model.
Lisa, how do you thank you, Steve. Lisa, how do you think about what Steve said? How do you make sense of that response?
Well, I agree with what you're saying, Steve. I mean, I've seen that too. I think it's very hard for hospitals to resist a community group coming to them and saying, we have been very successful with, a support group for breast cancer survivors. And we would like to meet with you and talk with you about us forming a group in the neighborhood around your hospital, because we know there are people we could reach out to and help them start their own group. So sometimes I have found when you're dealing with health officials, public health departments, hospitals, or even clinic administrators, if a community group comes to them, it has a lot more clout than, say, me and my organization coming to them. So if you know of neighborhood or community groups where there's been some very successful cancer support groups and they would be interested in possibly working in another neighborhood or community, it'd be pretty hard, I would think, for a hospital administrator to say, no, we don't want you to come and help our neighborhood people. Because what it does is it takes the onus off the hospital to have to be the be-all and do-all for the neighborhood with their resources that they have to put toward inpatient care primarily. And it also is a way to highlight and showcase a successful community group that's really had good success with drawing people in and having support sessions or workshops or whatever they do. I think it's really hard for a hospital to say no to that, especially if people will say, we'd be glad to, you know, work in the neighborhood surrounding your hospital and see what we could do to help. So that might be one idea for approaching that, so it doesn't come from an organizational group. That doesn't mean you can't work with them or not be behind with them, but they should be the upfront people and ask to meet with the administrators. Because I would doubt that an administrator will say, I'm not meeting with a community group that wants to work in the neighborhood around where our hospital is. But I don't know. I've never been a hospital administrator, so I don't know. I don't know if that helps you, Steve.
Well, all your ideas are good ones, and you haven't been to Cincinnati probably, or talked to hospital administrators in Cincinnati or cancer administrators. But it isn't difficult at all for hospital administrators to say it's not our job, or we don't have anybody who can really work with you, or there's no one that we can really have meet with a community agency. Sorry. But thanks for doing all the work that you're doing. So there's a dismissal of the community's involvement in it. I mean, it's striking that there's a 20-year life expectancy gap in every neighborhood around the hospital.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The hospitals are in these poor communities, and the average life expectancy is in their 60s, early 60s, whereas in the more affluent neighborhoods, which is less than a mile away, it's in the 80s. And when you say that to the hospital administrators, their response is, gee, that's interesting. I think I knew that, but there's nothing we can do about that.
Well, and so maybe,
we face those walls.
Or maybe don't ask the hospital, just go into the neighborhood, you know.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're doing that. We're doing that actually through the churches and through
community
agencies and through some innovative organizations that are trying to organize through grocery stores, actually. When people come into a grocery store and they want to buy food, we want to be able to say to them, whoa, wait a second, maybe you want to have a cancer screening. Maybe you want to have a blood pressure screening. And if you do, we know some free primary care providers that would help you. And here in this grocery store,
right. There's
some healthy foods that we'll give you discount money for. And so we're trying to catch people in the neighborhoods. But in some of our poorest neighborhoods, there's no grocery stores. So
right.
we face sort of these.
Let's put it all tied together.
Right.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, I would say to keep doing that, to keep going in the neighborhood and doing it, because they'll eventually take notice of it. They've got to, especially if there's a news article or a publication and it comes out and it says these people are doing this kind of work in this neighborhood. We invite you to join us, or bring other health organizations into it. Eventually, they'll want to join what's going on in their neighborhood. I mean, I'm just assuming that. And maybe they are as hardcore as you say. But whether they join it or not, I would say keep doing your good work. It sounds like you're doing wonderful things, Steve.
Makes sense.
And, you know, it may be that in some organizations, the director isn't the person you should be dealing with. I'll bet you if you looked at the average hospital's board of trustees, you'll find two or three people who are naturals for an interest in community and health, and that it might be good to start with them rather than start with the administrator, because if they become a force in terms of policy setting, then the administrator is going to hear you the way the administrator hadn't heard you before. Lisa, I want to make sure before we get to the end of our time that you have written a paper about, or papers about, your work.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if people wanted to read those, how they could get access to them. Are they on the internet?
Believe it or not, they are, but they were written like 20 years ago. I could send the link or send the citations. To, if you wanted to post it on your site, or you know, people emailed me, send them copies, whatever you think works best.
All right.
Can you do it? Is it hard to do it right this minute, or are they long?
No, they're not long. They're really basic, actually. They're very basic articles.
We accept basic.
I mean, by basic, I mean one is just really short, how to do a capacity inventory, and the other one is really looks at our neighborhood. It talks about the neighborhood process of what we call community-defined health, and it gives the step-by-step process. But it's not a real long article, maybe 7 or 8 pages.
What about the second one? If I wanted to read it, where would I look?
Let's see, and a lot of these journals aren't available anymore. That's why they're hard to find.
Oh, I just thought they might be on the internet.
No, you have to. I had to go through our medical librarian to find them again myself. I know, isn't that something?
Maybe you could help. Let us know as a follow up, Lisa.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll publish them again.
Okay, that would be great.
We can put them on our website so people can get them easily.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Any other questions, Maggie?
Go ahead.
No others.
Okay.
If somebody else wanted to contact you, Lisa. What's your email?
Yes, they can contact me at lisa.hadden, H-A-D-D-E-N, at cmich.edu.
Great.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to anybody who emails me.
That's great.
But you've got such wonderful knowledge about how to begin to have a new kind of relationship between professionals and local communities. And I know of nobody who's been more inventive than you. So we hope a lot of other people will be in contact and share that knowledge.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And I want to thank you also, Lisa. So much of what you said is so clear and so powerful. You know, the idea of egalitarian dialogue, and just the fact that you say the work we're doing, trust is the outcome. Trust is not the means, it's the ends. And then when that becomes the end, something amazing happens. So thank you so much for spending the time with us and doing the work you're doing.
Oh, no, it was my pleasure. And can I say one more outcome that came out of this? One of the outcomes was that after a couple of years of doing this over and over, they became so proud of what they knew about themselves and their health that they started creating what they called citizen accomplishment reports.
Wow.
And they would go to city council and give reports. And these are neighbors that weren't, you know, related to their inner or weren't active with local government. And they started going to city council and saying, this is what we're doing, you know, with students this year. And this is what we've discovered about health in our neighborhood this year. And here's the good stuff. And it was just wonderful to go hear these people be heard in their own terms again, in their own language, what they were accomplishing in terms of their health goals and strategies. And it was so nice to see city council would just, they'd sort of take a deep breath and sigh and go, oh, shoo, the capacity people are here.
I know. They would love that.
Wonderful, you know, wonderful.
I know. Nobody was railing about taxes. They were coming in to, you know, talk about good stuff. And so that also built more trust and more visibility for the neighborhood.
Is that is that organization have this written up? Is there any way people could follow up on finding more about that?
I don't know. The Cathedral District neighborhood is one of the most powerful neighborhoods in Saginaw because it was one of the original ones. And because of all this work, they started getting neighbors from other neighborhoods. And as you know, in urban areas, neighbors are very different and very provincial and very thought of them keep to themselves. But this got people to cross those boundaries and say, hey, how'd you guys do that? And so neighborhood association members were emissaries to other neighborhoods and say, well, this is what we're doing. And it really started to spread. And it really took off for many, many years. Now, I don't know what they're still doing, but I do know that the neighborhood associations now have all really been established and are quite powerful and have a very good relationship with city council.
So you might at least look up Cathedral District Neighborhood.
Yes.
If you wanted to find.
Mm-hmm. And they have a Facebook page. They have a Facebook
page. Oh, they
do. Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Most of the neighborhood associations do.
Great resource.
Yes. Social media.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Lisa. And you too, John.
You're most welcome, and thank both of you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Maggie, why don't you close us out?
Right. Lisa, this was really fascinating. I enjoyed listening, and particularly knowing being reminded of the importance of relationships. I know when you talked about walking, that I'm more inclined to walk if I'm walking with somebody. And we call it our walk and talk time.
Thank you. You just demonstrated you just said in three words what I was talking about.
I think it was great. So thank you very much for being with us today.
You're also welcome.
and thank you to those who joined us in listening in. We hope you'll join us again the next time. We're going to be talking on Monday. This is a new day for us. It'll be Monday, December 12th, and Peter and John will be sharing their latest thinking and what they see as what's new and most promising. So please do mark that on your calendar and be with us then. And until then, please visit our website, www.abundantcommunity.com. Leslie noted that she will be posting some links that Lisa will give to us, so check back for that. And this call is being recorded and will also be available on the website. So this brings our program to a close today, and thank you again for joining us, and see you next time.